Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Thanks so much for joining us for September 19th, 2016. Hope you're doing well. Stay in touch with me by email, josh@thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Josh Haston, and on Twitter, at Jew of Zion. Now, there's a story from Israel this week, which is probably a major story for days, months, weeks, and years to come, which I'd like to talk about on today's program, in a landmark deal, a defense deal for Israel. An agreement was signed, a deal was signed with Washington, in which Israel and the U.S. this past Wednesday, they're calling it a historic defense pact worth $38 billion over 10 years, the largest such pledge in American history to another nation. This was hailed by both countries as a cornerstone of their alliance. Again, $38 billion in defense aid promised by the U.S. to Israel. So on paper, it sounds great, right? We have a long-term deal with the U.S., and this should ensure our defense for many, many years to come. However, not everyone is praising the deal. Some are criticizing the deal. So to get all the insight on what the deal means, whether it's a good deal, a bad deal, a good friend of the show, the one and only Dan Diker from the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. He's a fellow over there and project director for the Program to Counter Political Warfare. Dan, welcome to Israel Uncensored here on the Land of Israel Network.
Great to be with you, Josh.
Thanks for coming on. So, Dan, the agreement signed between the U.S. and Israel, a 10-year deal, $38 billion. What is your initial reaction to the signed agreement?
Well, it certainly shows the unconditional, unwavering, eternal commitment between the United States and Israel. This is a continuation of a long tradition of American support for Israel and American financial support for Israel's military need to defend itself by itself, to quote Susan Rice and to quote past secretaries of state and past UN ambassadors and other U.S. officials. But let's bear in mind that we're really talking about an extra $200 million a year over what was the traditional $3.2 billion. And let's also bear in mind that this deal, this MOU, what's called a Memorandum of Understanding, has been negotiated at a time where the political relationship between the U.S. administration and Israel has been probably the most difficult political relationship that Israel has had in decades. It raises questions. Why now, and why a 10-year deal, and why some of the conditions of the deal, the most extraordinary of which is it would be Israel's commitment not to ask for any additional funds during the 10-year period that were divorced from the idea of acute warfare or major disaster terror campaigns.
So what would you say then with those question marks? Why now? Why that additional clause to no more funding, from Congress, if that's what we're talking about here? What are some of the answers to those questions as you posed just now?
Well, Josh, I think we have to take a look at the President of the United States' statement on the signing of the MOU and his connection of this MOU and the major $38 billion military package to the peace process. It seems to indicate, if your listeners would go on the internet and take a look at the White House statement, it would seem to indicate that the president is connecting this major military package to his unwavering commitment to create a Palestinian state somehow, even though those efforts have failed time and time and time again. And I think that's a curious, it's really a curious connection that he makes very clearly. And I think that it portends perhaps an unpleasant surprise in the coming weeks by this U.S. administration that may be at this time trying to
double down and doubly confirm its unwavering commitment to Israel's security. Let's remember the Obama, you know, just last point here, the Obama administration has always differentiated between its major commitment to Israel's defense and security on one level, and on the other level, it has, many say, endangered Israel's security by through its very, very aggressive, unprecedented political demands of Israel in terms of concessions to the Palestinians.
So I want to clarify that, and that's a very important point. Are you saying that perhaps the signing of the MOU between the U.S. and Israel and the United States' willingness to sign this deal at this time under the Obama administration, as you mentioned, that did not have the best relationship with the Netanyahu government, are you saying perhaps that they were willing to sign this deal and then in the weeks and months ahead, perhaps turn around and say, well, we are giving you $38 billion. You will do as we say. You will give away land in Judea and Samaria because we believe in the two-state solution. You don't have a choice. We're going to hold this deal over your head. Is this something that we might see here in the days, weeks, and few months ahead?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen, but we do know, according to the president's own statement issued by the White House just hours ago, that this deal is being discussed in the same context of their demand and their interest in creating, certainly their interest, not their demand, but their interest in promoting, brokering, mediating a two-state for two people solution. So I find that curious as to why they would connect a missile defense a package that's an additional $600 million plus the other $3.2 billion a year for other forms of military self-defense for Israel to the Palestinian issue. I don't understand. I don't understand what the two have to do with one another.
I don't either. But and let me ask you. That's just a follow up. On a similar point, I guess, could this be also a means to try to pacify Israel? Israel and the Netanyahu government spoke out very, very vociferously against the Iranian nuclear deal. Could this be another way to pacify the state of Israel, knowing Israel was against the deal went ahead? Could this be a way to say, well, you know, we passed the deal, but now you be quiet, Israel. Here we're giving you this this pledge here for all this money.
Well, I think they can definitely make the argument that this solidifies the American support, and this should also cause the Israelis to fall in line. But I think all of this is unimportant compared to for the administration two things: one, that it basically can take aggressive diplomatic moves at the United Nations with regard to the Palestinian issue. I think that's one of Obama's major legacy issues legacy reputation issues is the Palestinian issue. He's done the Iranian deal. He's prevented an Israeli attack, and that was one of his primary interests, in preventing an Israeli action against the Islamic Republic of Iran. And now he wants to leave his mark on the Palestinian front. And this is a way of setting that up. There's another very problematic issue with this arrangement, with this deal, the MOU, and that is it may lead to a constitutional crisis inside the United States, because one of the deal's provisions is that Israel would not be able to make any additional requests of Congress. But Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and Congress is the one that is the body, the governmental branch of the American political system that determines and submits its own recommendations and its own budgets for approval. So this notion that the executive branch is going to try to sign Israel and make a foreign government sort of bypass a co-equal branch of government in the legislative branch of the United States can really create, very, very serious problems. What is that? The executive branch going to dictate to the legislative branch in the United States what they can and can't do? So right away, Lindsey Graham, is the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, has already submitted a bill to increase Israel's assistance by $1.5 billion as a direct challenge to this deal already. So what is, in sum, what is the absurdity of what's going on here is that you have the senator, you have the chairman of the Senate Foreign Appropriations Committee facing off against the president of the United States and demanding from the president that Israel be given more money when the president has just signed Israel in an MOU that it would not ask for more money. Is that the strangest turn of events you could imagine?
Yeah, that's for sure. I noticed that right away, that Congress already gave their 2 cents, at least one congressman, and I'm sure that's going to expand here in the near future. Another aspect of the deal, and a headline here from last week's Jerusalem Post, says, good for IDF, bad for defense industries. And the explanation here by Yaakov Lapin is that inside the deal itself, over, I believe, after 6 or 7 years, at that point, the money in which the United States aids Israel in defense will actually have to be spent exclusively in the United States. That was not the case until today. Many fear that initially, while this might be the deal might be good for the IDF, this could harm in a significant way Israel's local defense industry. In other words, people here who are working in that sector will potentially lose their jobs, will lose out to companies in the United States, because Israel, under the agreement, will have to take those funds and use them for purchasing of defense equipment and at U.S. companies. What do you have to say about that aspect of the deal and the potential hazards for the working man here in Israel who may in fact be unemployed should in fact Israel have to turn to the U.S. in order to spend the money there?
Well, Jeff, my understanding of that part of the MOU is that it was originally meant to take place right up front in the beginning of the 10-year MOU period. And Israel's representatives, that would be Ambassador Dermer and some of the NR representatives in the National Security Council, actually forced the compromise of a phased budget plan in order to, first of all, create the majority of the period. There would be no effect. Now, let's remember, the majority of the period only begins in 2018, 2 years from now, and it's an additional 6 years. So it's 8 years from now. And that leaves Israel an awfully long, you know, a long time in order to make alternative plans or perhaps to negotiate an amendment. You know, these deals can be amended depending on, who the president of the United States would be at that time. There are all sorts of possibilities that can happen between now and then. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about it. And I think that, there are a lot of positive aspects to the plan. I mean, let's face it, $38 billion is far from being chump change, as the overused idiomatic expression goes.
Here's a silly question, perhaps maybe an uneducated question. And I apologize if that's the case. I apologize to you and I apologize to the listeners. I'm definitely not an expert as you are on Israel's defense strategies, but do we need the money? And I'm asking this question because, you know, it would seem that as a sovereign nation, over time, I would hope that Israel would try to rely on its own resources, you know, regardless of what sphere we're talking about, in this case, defense. Shouldn't Israel try to rely on itself more and more instead of continuing to depend on the United States, especially to the sum of $38 billion? Do we need this money? Is this necessary? Why can't we produce what is needed here locally? I hope it's not silly to ask.
Well, Israel spends about 10% of its GNP on defense, which is like $35 billion a year anyway. So this is 10% of Israel's annual outlay on its own defense. And let's bear in mind that the monies being used here are basically being reinvested, applied to the American defense industry. So it's not just a pure cash gift, but there are conditions on that help the American defense industry at the same time. So there's we do a lot of America does a lot of R&D with this money. We do a lot of research and development with this money. Obviously, our American interest is in having Israel be the strongest power, the only free country in the Middle East, and be the strongest power in the region, defending America's vital interests. This is more important now than ever for the United States. The United States has become a far weaker player in the Middle East arena. Israel has become a far stronger player in the Middle East arena, and this ironclad partnership, this alliance between Israel and the United States is now more than ever serving U.S. National security interests because politically, we see politically the United States has really contracted and pulled back on its commitments to its Middle Eastern allies, while at the same time I think it's clear that the source of international instability takes place right here in the Middle East. And Israel is on the front line defending the interests of free countries, in the West, and cooperating actually much more closely with some of its Arab neighbors. So this money is a well-placed investment by the United States, and I would look at it that way as opposed to some sort of, outlay, some sort of, we use the word in Hebrew, chesed, which is the acts of loving kindness. It is not an act of loving kindness. It is a pure political national security interest of the United States as the, still some claim, the strongest country in the world and the country, Israel's strongest and best ally, to protect America's interests and the interests of America's allies in the United States and by extension throughout the world.
So one last question then, and again, not really to get political here, but we talked just a minute ago or so about Congress and how, you know, they could perhaps get involved in changing the terms or at least adding their two cents to the deal. What ramifications can we possibly see, whether Donald J. Trump is the next president of the United States or it's Hillary Clinton, in regard to this deal? Will it make a difference who becomes president? And can this deal be changed one way or another? What effect of the November elections, what effect can they possibly have on this deal, even though we know, we see here that it's actually already signed and ready to go?
Well, this, Josh, first of all, in the beginning of your wind up for this question, you said not to get political here. But Josh Haston, you are politics. So your show is politics. So I don't know why you said not to get political here.
Well, I wasn't going to ask you who you're voting for, Dan. That's really what I was coming to there. I wasn't asking who you're supporting or who you prefer.
Here's a candidate named Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Mr. Smith.
Okay.
He's got some. But look, let's be clear. From an Israeli point of view, as you know, as an Israeli for many years, Israeli governments have worked very, very well with both Democratic and Republican administrations. Clearly, Israel, the polling numbers of both parties have worked more in Israel's favor from the Republican side. But this is really not about which side is more pro-Israel, which side would help Israel under the terms of such a deal, because the real question that stems from your question is, what is going to be the relationship between the future president of the United States, whether it's Mr. Clinton, whether it's Mrs. Clinton, or whether it's Mr. Trump or someone else under some possible circumstance, and the notion of executive power versus a more balanced approach to working with Congress? Because this is the ultimate issue. Congress has been the home, the source, the epicenter, holding the budgets, figuring appropriations. That's their job, is figuring out what kind of appropriations are going to go to foreign allies. And so I think that the major challenge here is going to be a very much a red, white, and blue, stars and stripes American challenge in working out how much executive privilege the executive branch of government is going to take and what the relationship between the executive branch and the legislative branch will be. And frankly, we saw a little taste of that just in the Speaker Boehner, inviting Mr. Netanyahu to speak to both houses of Congress. You remember how furious the White House was.
Yes.
when that happened. I mean, that really touches the same point, is whether Congress and the legislative and the executive branches they're co-equal members of or partners, branches of government are going to work together and balance their balance the relationship in a way I don't think we've seen prior to this administration so much tension between the legislative and the executive branches of the government. I think that's the real issue with regard to this MOU for Israel for $38 billion. More than is this going to be who's going to be more pro-Israel and more anti-Israel? Israel's work not anti-Israel, but less aggressively pro-Israel. And Israel and both Republican and the Democratic parties have worked very well together in terms of their elected representative as president, and they will continue. I have very little doubt they will continue to be a strong relationship with both parties.
Well, all I have to say is everyone needs to stay tuned and see how this plays out, both in the near future and down the road here, because it's a 10-year deal. We'll have to see how it all plays out, starting, I guess, tomorrow or the day after tomorrow from when we started the conversation on how this affects the peace process and then going from there. But I want to thank you so much, Dan Diker, Fellow and Project Director of the Program to Counter Political Warfare at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, a great friend of the show and a longtime friend. I'm proud to call him, and I want to thank you for your time today here on Israel Uncensored. And let's hope for some good news, as always, here in Israel.
Wonderful, Josh. Thank you for having me on your program.
All the best. This has been Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network here at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Haston. That is all the time we have for today. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Big shout out and thank you to Binyamin Bresky, Ben Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Without his tireless efforts, there's just no audio. There's no sound. We can't do the show. Keep it locked in here on thelandofisrael.com for all the wonderful shows here. Check out the latest news and views and analysis that you're just not getting anywhere else, really. Get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Josh Haston, H-A-S-T-E-N, and on Twitter at Jew of Zion. Most importantly, between now and next week, everybody be safe. Shalom from Jerusalem. Founded in 1902, World Mizrahi is a global, Torah-driven, community-focused educational organization committed to Jewish identity and destiny. The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to hayuvel.com, that's H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, for more information.